You are listening to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and role-playing gamers.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
Hello and welcome to a strange episode in strange times of On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast coming to you from the middle of the coronavirus epidemic. If you are listening to this in the future, do note, these are the strange times of 2020. And it's also about role-playing games and the people who play them. My name is Eran Aviram.
And my name is Uri Lifshitz. Hello.
And because the times are indeed so strange, we have decided to do an episode about...
Some would say somber, dire.
Apocalyptic. We have decided to do an episode about uplifting. How to make your sessions more positive? How to make your players feel better? Regardless of how you're playing, probably online if you're playing these days.
I sometimes do what I refer to as an uplifting session. That is a gaming session whose entire purpose is to make my players feel uplifted. When does the time call for such an event? Usually after the end of a big adventure. That is one example. I use these sessions to let my players actually experience the results of their actions. Let us say that we had an excellent adventure and the players went off and saved the kidnapped prince and they bring him back to the queen and they get their just reward and everyone's happy and we end the session with hurrah! Thank you, kind heroes, for saving my son! I am forever in your debt and here is your reward! In many adventures, that would be the end of the adventure. But I want my players not just to hear that they did an excellent job and got a reward. I want them to feel it. I want them to experience that.
To feel uplifted.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to follow up that statement with, okay, now you have 100,000 gold coins. What do you spend them on? And I'm pretty much going to give them anything they want. Fine, I go to the tavern and I buy the whole town a drink. Okay, that's a town of 500,000 people, but sure, why not? Okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to buy me this specially carved wooden shield armor thing with the family crest of my ancestors. Fine, you have it. Amazing. Do the thing. Get on. Okay, I go to the tavern. Everyone buy you drinks. Everyone loves you. I let my players feel the love, not just know that it's there.
Show, don't just tell.
Another time for an uplifting session is after the player character gains some new levels or ability or a new status in life, as a way to again let the players test out and feel their new powers and ability. Pretty much after every time we have a major level up, I throw my players a new encounter, which is easy, because the purpose of that encounter is not to be a challenge. The purpose of this encounter is to be a safe environment for them to actually experiment with their new abilities.
And to show off.
To show off and experiment. They usually come together if it is an easy encounter. Let us say that we're playing D&D 5th edition and one of the player's wizards just got the fireball spell. Which is an awesome moment. Now, in an actual dungeon dive, there could be a million of reasons why that would fizzle, be wrong. We all know that ever since D&D 1st edition, the number one cause for the death of spellcasters was fireballs that they themselves have cast. It's a known fact. We had this debate for like 20 years now, moving forward. However, if I give that player a chance to have just a bunch of goblins running at him, all conveniently clustered together, so he could cast the spell, he could see the result, he could roll the dice, he would actually experience this in field condition, and feel good about that. This is a win-win in my book. And the same goes for a new power or status. If one of the players just got knighted, or got a title, this is an awesome moment to let them explore that. Okay, you go into the tavern. What do you do? But before you answer me, you should know that some of the people are already looking at you. One, bow deeply. Four of them are clambering over, wishing to buy you drinks because you are the new dukes. All of these are way to test out and let players enjoy their just rewards. As a side note, of course, these are all things that you can take away later on. That gives you leverage. But for the time being, this is an uplifting moment. Listeners might ask, fine, Uri, how can we create this sense of uplifting moments? Do we just throw away stuff for the character to overcome without any dice roll? So no, don't throw away the mechanic. Use the mechanic. If your party is trying to do something, set lower difficulties for the challenges ahead. Simply to increase the chance that they would succeed. After all, the point here is not the actual challenge your characters are facing at the moment. It's the sense that you get from overcoming it. You can also enhance NPC's reaction to the positive side. If the character defeated the kobold, it can be, huh, thank you for saving our village. Here is 5 gold pieces. It can also be, oh my god, that was so awesome how you defeated those goblins. Here are 5 gold pieces, that is all we have. We would love to give you more, but we don't have any. Okay, enhance the description to the positive as well. The character's sword does not simply stab the goblin. Your sword slices through the goblin, cutting it in half like butter. You can sense the improvement of your skill. Also, fail forward. If one of the characters fail their roles, still reward that character with some sort of progress. We have mentioned this technique in our previous episode about making your players feel smarter. I would suggest that if the players are trying to figure out something, for example, looking for clues outside the murder scene, even on a failure, I would say, oh, you see a lot of clues that you can't quite make out the exact nature of, but you take exact notes of them. Always give them something. Don't leave them hanging. That's exactly what stopped the uplifting momentum. And that sense of movement brings me to my next point, which is forward momentum toward their goals. In an uplifting session, always give the feeling that the players and their characters are moving forward towards something. Yeah. It doesn't have to be something concrete. It doesn't have to be a specific goal, but give the sensation of movement. You are moving and you are moving forward. That continuous forward momentum, that leaves you with a sense of an uplifted spirit, that you have accomplished something.
I very much agree with many of the things that you've said, but I think I have a bit of a different perspective on some of this. I would like to start it somewhere else and see where I can go with this, okay? Let's start with the end, with the epilogue, because that's the part of the game in which I usually feel as if I am, as a GM, give the player the most ability to influence what is going forward, because, of course, that's the end. So after the end, and we had a whole episode about this, we talked about how you should go player by player and have each of them explain what is now happening. Have an epilogue, both for the characters, but also for the world. They have a lot of power at that moment. And usually, because of the style of games that I run, usually adventurous games with some humor, with lots of good spirit, these epilogues are uplifting. We are talking about good, interesting things that happen to our characters. And this is always great fun. So, of course, we can't do this every session, and we can't do this during a session. But what can we take from this? And then I go to the opposite place. Not the beginning, but mid-session. There's a trick that I learned from the brilliant system 13th Age, in which when you do a journey, in order for the journey to feel as if it took some time and it was a thing that happened in the game world, and not just, okay, it was 3 months and now you are at position X, a trick that they suggest is go player by player, ask them what kind of obstacle did you face, and then how did you overcome it? and no one rolls anything. You can roll if you want to, but again, fail forward. A failure shouldn't stop you. The journey happened. We are simply trying to understand what sort of obstacles happened during it. What sort of interesting moments happened while you took the journey. So you invent both the obstacles and the way you overcome it. That's great. Players love it. It allows them to be awesome because they can just say for a moment, yeah, the electric fences, but I jumped over them and then I went over and turned down the current so the others could go through. And I feel amazing because I'm a hacker and I am acrobatic and I just show how I am a hacker and acrobatic. And if the dice were involved, I might have failed. But they weren't, so I couldn't fail. So it was all great and everything worked. Sure, but again, and just like Uri said, we should usually involve mechanic because we want it to feel more concrete. For the journey, we all realize that this is just a short storytelling moment, and after which we'll go back to the actual game. We're just trying to say the journey sort of mattered, and let's do it in a way that is uplifting to everyone. So these are two very different perspectives on the uplifting part. One is at the end and it's very big. One it's momentarily and it's very small. And I think there's one specific technique that combines them both in a way that is very obvious. And it's called, how do you want to do this? Which is something that has become a quote by Matthew Mercer of Critical Role. Now you can see it on shirts, you can see it in the internet, in memes, wherever you want to. And that's a very simple, tiny little thing. When a player during combat, it's D&D 5 they are playing, kills a monster, well, Matthew never explains how many hit points the monster has, but he says, as the creature gets more and more damage, that the creature looks more and more fatigued or weary in some way, whatever. Until eventually a player deals enough damage, and then the way for Mercer to signal to the players that the creature is dead is not, the creature falls down. No, no. Instead he says, how do you want to do this? Because this explains to them, the creature is dead, you've just killed him. And more importantly, he hands the player this moment. The moment of triumph. Of destroying this creature. It's not something that you do with a bandit. It's something that you do with a bandit king. And the players are always, always, if they've been running for 5 years now, and you can always see when this happens, the entire table is cheering. It's a moment of triumph. And instead of holding it for the GM, Mercer pushes it into the player. The player then gets to describe what exactly is going to happen to the enemy, how they die. And it was them that achieved it through the dice, and now they get the power in the narrative. It's great. It's great because it happens a lot, and yet it's still powerful.
My GM in my Pathfinder game does this as well. He has a different phrasing for it, but basically whenever he lets us describe the damage, we know that there's the immediate collective sigh of relief or joy or exhilaration, depending on the situation. You can almost see the light of the spotlight moves from the GM to the player who actually got the kill shot. And you can see them basking in the glory of it. It's a moment.
So I will, of course, continue on to Savage Worlds because, as usual, it's a system that presents excellent, excellent ways to allow the players to feel great, awesome, uplifted. One of them is the interlude. It's a mechanic, simple mechanic that we talked on before, and the main power behind the interlude is that you can use it with any system. Generally speaking, it means whenever there's some downtime, it can be a voyage of some sort, it can be just downtime between, like, you have to spend a week in this settlement, or it can be whatever. You draw a card, and that tells you what kind of story you're going to tell. And it can be a story that you tell in character about your character's history, or it can be something that is currently happening, just like with 13th Age, here's an obstacle, how did you overcome it? You don't roll anything. The player gets all of the interpretive power. The card only says something like, a story of triumph, or something that you really desire, or something like that. And then the player gets to tell whatever they want. It shouldn't, of course, be too long. We're not here to hear you tell us a story. We're here to play a game. But in this moment, you have the power to say whatever you want. It is mechanical. You draw a card. You will get a Benny in Savage Worlds for doing this. Although, of course, I give everyone a Benny. I never give a single player a Benny, which is, again, by the way, an uplifting moment. When people get a Benny, all of them get a Benny. And as a group, it's always more joyful to have something happen to you as a group. It's such a positive feeling. And so with an interlude, you can create this moment exactly when there might be a lull in the pacing. So something like the action sort of slows down to a crawl because we have to spend a week here. So here's a card. Tell us about something that you desire. And let's continue. Let's keep up the high octane and push on past this. Instead of making it into a valley, it's now a hill, and we get to see further ahead, and everyone get a Benny, and it's awesome. And the second thing that Savage Worlds gives us is adventure cards. And these are very interesting, because that's a new mechanic that you can add on the system. You need to actually buy cards for them, so that's an optional part of Savage Worlds. Although many worlds of Savage Worlds, like ours, like Crystal Heart, create their own deck of adventure cards. This is what we did as well. 52 cards. And the thing is, they just give the players new stuff to do. It could be something like, you get to automatically succeed on the next check that you do. It can be something like, the cavalry arrive. It could be something like, they lock you in this new settlement. As you can only play this when you come to a new settlement, but still. And at the beginning of every session, the players love this. Loved every session. They love this moment when they get dealt the cards. When you only begin the game, you only get one card, each player. But later on, every player gets 2, 3, even 5 cards. You can still only play one. Each player can only play one. But you get a lot of awesome cards, and you look at them, and you trade with other players, and you talk about, yeah, what we can do with this, and, oh, this could be so awesome, now that we are planning this attack on this and this castle, we can use this power, and you get this card that gives you all of your power points back, so you can cast all of the spells now, and then, that's amazing. They love this. It is really important to note that the GM does not receive anything at all. No, I think it's really powerful. I think it's a powerful tool. And it teaches us a powerful thing about Savage Worlds and other games. I don't need to receive anything. I'm the fucking GM. If I want to, there will be double the amount of guards. I can bring reinforcement whenever I want. At least in games like Savage Worlds. In Pathfinder, it can sometimes be unfair because there's balance to the fights. In Savage Worlds, the world balance does not exist. Giving the players more power literally only ends with them feeling uplifted. Yes, it allows me to present more challenges, but I am a fan of the players. I only present challenges for them to overcome. Now they have more tools to do so, and because they are different tools, these are not skills, these are cards that they are holding in their hands that they use by presenting the card to me. It's an excellent, fun moment for everyone. And because it's so different, it feels like you overcame something in a different, more meaningful way. It's not just another skill roll, which I think teaches me a lot about what is an uplifting moment. It can't happen a lot. It can happen only when you defeat a powerful boss. How do you want to do this? Or once per session when you play a card. Or when there's a journey. Again, probably doesn't happen a lot every session. And it needs to give the players the ability to interpret things however they'd like. Or within some limits, obviously. They can't just suddenly have a cannon and out of nowhere if there are no cannons in this wall, etc. But it needs to give them something. They need to be able to feel playfulness. You know, playfulness in the meaning of the actual sociological word, the meaning of play, is some sort of boundaries within which you allow yourself to test, to try. Exactly like that session that you talked about, Uri, that moment in a fight that is not supposed to be too challenging. It's supposed to allow you to try out stuff, to feel playful, to throw a fireball and see how it feels, to maybe do something with a fireball that you wouldn't otherwise allow yourself to do because you don't want to spend that spell slots, because who knows what happens next? Who knows what the next fight will be against? You need to save the spell slot, the fireball. No. This is a simple fight. This is the only thing you'll have today. Go ahead. Throw as many fireballs as you want. Throw them into the water. See what happens. Do whatever.
It's amazing how many different gaming systems simply understood that one of the best ways to get players to feel uplifted and empowered and strong is simply to give them a mechanical way to take over narrative control. You can see this very clearly in Fate with Fate Points and in many other gaming systems where you simply say, okay, here is some sort of a way for you, the players, to feel in control of the narrative.
Always within some boundaries, of course. Always within some boundaries.
Otherwise, it's not within the game, right?
Yeah. It becomes your own storytelling session, which is might be fun, but that's not the game that we came to play.
Unless you're playing a collaborative storytelling.
Unless that's moving exactly on, what you came to play. So I think that's it, Uri. How would we summarize this?
Okay, to summarize, I hope that we've managed to show you how to use uplifting moments and uplifting sessions in order to advance your game and give a more grounded sense of achievement and success for your players. But it's also worth noting that this is a great tool for days such as these, strange days, when you're not playing your regular game or in a regular manner. And you want your players to leave the gaming table with something hopeful and uplifting in their soul. And this is an excellent tool to do that.
And now it's time to take the load off.
This world is carried on the shoulders of dwarves.
This is the part of the show in which we talk about role-playing games in our personal lives. Uri, would you like to begin? We both have new releases.
We sure do. I have released Rolling with Laughter, my very own comedy adventure, which is also a guide to how to run comedy adventures. In light of current situation, I have actually switched it on to pay what you want so people could download it for free. If you want to grab it and run a session for someone in order to, you know, improve and uplift their spirit in these difficult times, please feel free to do so. There will be a link in the show notes. I have also released a brand new game system called Dozens, which I've been using for years now. It's probably the simplest game system that you will ever read. In its basic form, it's literally just two paragraphs. Most of them is, hey, roll a d12. High is good, low is bad. Let's play. And the second paragraph is, oh, character sheets? Okay, you have basically two sentences. The first one is, my character is really, really good at X. And the second, my character is also kind of good at Y and Z. This is basically it. The reason why I've developed this system is because I've been running a lot of introduction games. And a lot of people get cold feet if they see a really complicated character sheet or if I need to spend more than 2 minutes explaining rules. And I needed something that would allow me, on the one hand, to say, okay, we're going to start playing in a minute. Let's clear the table and start. And on the other hand, to actually have some sort of mechanic. And I've used the D12 because, A, I love it and it's the best die ever. Mm-hmm. And B, because it's exotic enough for people to say, huh, that's weird. Apparently, in role-playing games, you use weird dice. Who would have thought, huh? And the third reason is that it has a small range. So if it's just one introduction session, I want people to also have plenty of ones and 12. A lot of critical fumbles and critical success. So I prefer something with less of a range than the canonical D20.
It's a really nice system. I helped to edit the final PDF, which again is quite short, even with all of the added extras that you can add if you want to. And I would recommend maybe trying to use it when you run a game to your family during these strange times. It can be used through Hangouts. You don't need any virtual tabletop. You don't need anything, just a D12, which can be rolled in Google Hangout, or even simply Google. You can roll by typing into Google roll 1d12, for example. Try it.
In my latest game, we actually combined the two. We had a Zoom session and people would roll on their phone using the Google dice roller and simply show the phone to the screen while sure. the dice rolling there. So, you know, there won't be any
cheating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's loads of fun. And there will also be, of course, a link to the PDF in the show notes. It's also free. Go grab it.
I do have a new thing out. It's called Shed Not a Tear, O Princess. And it's an unusual one-shot that I created for D&D 5, based on an unusual one-shot that I created for D&D 4, like 10 years ago. It comes with its own pre-generated characters, and it's sort of mystical. It really is very different from One Last Tribute, my previous adventure that I released like a month ago. One Last Tribute is classic dungeon crawl, very much meant in new players in mind, while Shed Not a Tear is for, I would say, at least GMs that have some experience, and it has all sort of guiding actions in it, describing to GM various things that they should note or do to create a very specific kind of an experience. I avoid getting into details because a lot of the adventure is experiencing the adventure. I'll just say that it begins with a weird dark night in the Feywild, where the characters are invited to the halls of Pine's Silence, where the Winter Tamari hosts the yearly ball where everyone gather to hide from the darkness outside. The details are in the link in the show notes. And if you want to run this to your friends or family using an online, any sort of online virtual tabletop, just send us an email, show@dwarfcast.net, and I will send you a complimentary copy of the adventure. You don't need to buy it. It's strange times. Again, let's try to make them a bit more uplifting for everyone, if we can.
That's one of the main reasons why we're not recording an episode titled Plagues and How to Use Them in Your Game.
Although there are a lot of interesting things to say about that. This is probably Indeed. Not the time.
Yeah, but we are of the mind that role-playing games are more than games. It's a social encounter, it's a hobby, it's a way to influence people with your art and with your acting and with your imagination. And like all ways of influencing other people, you can and should use it for good.
And with these wise words, people, send us an email to show@dwarfcast.net if you want to influence us in some way or suggest anything or ask us a question. And if not, we will see you again next time on this On the Shoulder of Dwarves. And for now,
Later!
Shoulders of Dwarves is shared under Creative Commons by Attribution Non-Commercial 4. Intro and outro are by The Cliché Duo. And you can email us at show@dwarfcast.net.
On the shoulders of dwarves.
Friends, these are strange times, as we have mentioned. If you have the means and the inclination, please purchase PDFs from your favorite RPG creators. This is a tough time for everyone, and helping people financially by purchasing what they create is an excellent way to support other content creators. We're fine, by the way, Eran and I, but we would like to take this opportunity to ask you to support other content creators by purchasing whatever they offer online. I personally believe that aid another is the most important action one can take.
On the shoulders of dwarves.